down by the water.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Run Culture Podcast. My name is Dane Verway. I'm an experienced running physiotherapist, coach, and marathoner. This season will involve open discussions with my running colleagues about the key principles behind injury-free running and optimal performance. It'll be backed by personal experience, science, and history. I can only hope some of these chats inspire curiosity and expand or confirm perspectives and beliefs amongst the running community. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. Far out. Well done on the weekend.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. I'm a bit of a tear at the moment.
Just, I know.
Bit of a purple patch, which doesn't happen often. So just got to take it in and keep on rolling.
Yeah, far out. I want to get cracking straight away with the podcast.
Yep.
I just want to. Yeah. So last week we tried to record it and it didn't work. I'm kind of glad that it didn't work because we can talk about this 1500 and 800 you did on the weekend. I'm rapt to have you on the show. A bit about you. You're a 19-year-old from hailing from Brisbane in Australia. You run with the Burt Run Group. You run for about 5 years. You have a fantastic YouTube channel documenting your running journey. And now you're in New Orleans, Louisiana, NOLA Uni, and you're a D1 distance runner trying to get good, as you say. Yeah, it's been great following your YouTube channel, and things are starting to click this year. So I thought it'd be great to reach out to you just to hear a little bit about your experiences and what you feel like's working at the moment and what's worked over the last the short while, and why you think you're in this purple patch.
Yeah, for sure. No, thank you for the kind words and the intro there. But things are definitely clicking. And honestly, like, easily put, I've just been working smarter but harder at the same time. It's one of those things that it's hard to find the balance, but I think I've found it for me. And I'm just responding really well to everything I throw at my body at the moment. So yeah, it's a good feeling when things are just clicking along and everything's feeling like exactly how it should. It doesn't happen often, but yeah, no.
Yeah, no, I spot on, Matt. I've been there before in my own running journey, and there's periods where you're just overtrained or tired and you're like, nah, I haven't got it right here, I need to back off. And then there's times where you're just like, oh, everything you touch just is working. Maybe a little bit about your background. Can you fill in everyone how you got into running, and then maybe just a bit about even that Reddit article, how you sort of started to really push the K's and seem to respond initially, at least to running more, and your journey there.
Yeah, for sure. So I think like a lot of distance runners, I came from a soccer background, so actually I played all sports, right? Like my dad was really successful in pretty much any sport he kind of did. And I feel like I definitely got that gene where I was playing cricket, soccer, footy, rugby, did like the whole, everything I could kind of thing. And I guess I really like soccer. I was playing NPL. If anyone who plays soccer in Australia would kind of know NPL, for a junior, it's like decent, like it's pretty much the highest level you can play at without going to like an academy. So I was pretty good at soccer. I made a state team when I was 13, 14, and obviously a big component of soccer is running. And I'd always been, finishing top three at school and cross country. I'd go to, ours was called Bayside, which is like our region, and I'd do all right there. I might get on a might get a Bayside singlet sometimes. Like, so I guess I started getting into running for the soccer kind of thing, you know, point of view. And it just really clicked. Like, I loved it. I loved going for runs. I obviously had some like natural ability there where I could instantly pretty much go from, you know, not running a bunch to, you know, I could do 10K, 15K, like, you know, pretty comfortably. And I was lucky enough to have a few people around me who would like always go for runs with me, always be down to, you know, do whatever, like, you know, run in cool places. And so I got a really nice kind of start into the sport. And I guess from there, it was 2018. We had like the school track season before, obviously, the actual track season started. And I'd done the whole school track season. And then there was a few kind of small meets on. And I was like, you know, I'll just do it, you know, on a Saturday for a bit of fun. It wasn't soccer season. And I think my first 1500 around like 4:28. So, you know, pretty like not bad for, you know, someone coming from soccer. And I had no speed though. Like I never had speed. Even in soccer, I couldn't sprint. Like I could run all game, but I couldn't sprint. And that definitely correlates even now. But so yeah, I was doing this kind of stuff. I guess while the soccer season wasn't, you know, it was preseason, I was running a lot more and still training for soccer. But then like beginning of 2019, I ran state 3K and I ran 9:24. So I qualified for nationals in my first ever 3K on the track. And I guess from when I made nationals, I was like, man, like I've been doing this for like, what, 3 months maybe? Like actually training properly. So I kind of, yeah, from there, I was still playing soccer, but I was definitely leaning towards running a bit more. My first nationals, I came fifth in the 3K and I came 11th in the 1500. And after I did that, I was like, man, I came fifth in Australia.
Yeah.
And I've been training for like 6 months, whatever. And I guess from there, like I stopped playing soccer. So I was like, I'm just going to run. My first state cross country, I won that. My first nationals, I was the favorite going in. And I came fourth. I was third Queenslander though. So obviously I'd won state, but I came fourth in nationals. And
yeah,
the week after that, I ran 15:12 for a 5K. It was like a local park run. Not official, but you know, it's still... You can claim a 15-12 park. You can claim park run, I feel like.
Yeah.
Depends which one, but this one you can claim. Minniffy park run. If you're in Brisbane, like it's a really fast course, not the easiest though. So I did that when I was 14. And I guess like I'm someone who's very like all in. And I guess from that, this will link to the Reddit article. I started training a lot more, you know, just like anything. I was like, all right, well, to get good at, you know, just to do well academically, you got to study more, you know. So I kind of took like that approach, or like if you want to get soccer, you got to train more. I took that approach to running,
yeah.
Which we all kind of know, like especially as a junior developing, you know, going through puberty, all that kind of stuff. It actually probably isn't the approach to take. So I started like double running. I started, you know, pushing the Ks a lot more to the point where I was probably doing like 120, 130 when I was 15. And that's when this Reddit article came about because this is the start of COVID. And I started making YouTube videos. I started making a little bit more of a name for myself, kind of just even just like locally in the Australian running community. It basically was this massive, massive Reddit article saying there's this kid doing 120, 130K a week. He just ran 15:12 for a 5K. Like, what do we think of this? And it's just everyone just absolutely like slamming me. I'm like, man, okay, yeah. But to be honest, I saw this and pretty much all this backlash and I was still like so like headstrong. I was like, nah, like whatever. But I would always look at like the 1% that it worked for. Like, you know, Alberto Salazar, even though he's a terrible person, he was a very good high school runner, very good college runner, very good professional runner. And he was doing, you know, 150K a week in high school. So there's examples of it that it worked. So I would always go back to that. But looking back on it now, it definitely, it should have been red flags in my, as soon as it, like, you know, I was getting backlash and everyone around me wasn't doing the same thing. It should have been like, you know, the cogs should have been turning and been like, all right, hang on, what's going on here? And I guess from that, I had like two really rough years where I just like wasn't improving. I kind of went from 15:12 to 15 when I was 14 to 15:10 when I was 16. So I was still very like a very competitive runner, even like state wise. Nationally though, I was starting to get, you know, I wasn't anywhere near the top five as I was when I first got into it. And I guess looking back on it, I definitely should have realized that, especially juniors, it just really doesn't matter because everyone's developing at different rates. And the development thing is huge. Like, there's, I'm not going to name names, but there's people winning nationals when I first got into it that aren't running now, or they were running, but they had the same thing. They just weren't improving, but they grew a lot earlier. They were developed through that. And I wasn't developed. And I guess I really want to go to college. When I won state cross country for the first time, I actually threw up like an O because I wanted to go to Oregon. I was like, you know, as a kid, I was like, you know, like, this is cool. Like, I want to go, you know, Jess Hull was running for Oregon at the time. She was smashing. I was like, man, I want to go to Oregon. And I guess, like, I wasn't going into my, like, year 12 track season. I hadn't run anything fast enough to actually go over. And that's when I was like, something's got to change. Like, I've been training like so much volume for so long. Like, and I wasn't fast over 1500. I couldn't run a fast 400. Like, I was decent. I was really good at cross country still, but anything on the track, I was just getting smashed. And I guess from that, I started working with the coach I had through my year 12 season, Peter Bracken at Burt. And he kind of was like, all right, Maddie, let's cut the Ks down to 100K a week. Let's do three sessions a week and one kind of more high intensity, you know, anaerobic 800, 1500 meter work, kind of workout. And then two, you know, maybe a fartlek or a threshold, and then like a more traditional Saturday track workout. And I went from 849 to 830. So I had a massive breakthrough. I broke 15, ran 14:56. And then, you know, a few months later, I ran 14:47. And I guess that my whole year 12, I had a really, really good year again. Like, I was kind of back to where I knew I could be. And it was just that different approach, different stimulus. And I was responding really well to it. So I guess that kind of led to, you know, eventually I committed to go run at the University of New Orleans. And yeah, obviously a lot's changed since then. But that's kind of like my background through high school and how I got into it.
That's fantastic. Story, and I like it how you're starting to, you've had a good experience initially with doing a bit of running, but then realize that there's a tipping point where that can become too much in terms of volume. Mm-hmm. And then in liaising with Peter, you sort of worked out that sometimes pulling back and less is more, and focusing on the intensity side of things and making sure that you actually recover enough to absorb the training. And then it looks like in recent times you've stumbled across the double threshold, Norwegian double threshold method. And I've been looking at, like, following your Strava and a few of your videos on it. And I find it really interesting because you hear of people in America or Europe doing it, but it's nice to see an Australian dabbling in it and having some personal experience with it. So I'd love to chat about that. And but then also, like, how much do you think that's played a part in your recent breakthrough as well? Like, how much of it is it down to that? Like, because I guess that's sort of in line with the intensity control, because you can use a blood lactate monitor a bit to monitor your intensity to make sure that you're not overdoing it as much, and perhaps, like, being able to better determine when you're getting caught up in the workout and pushing it too hard. First of all, like, what is the double threshold method, and when did you start it, and what inspired you to sort of go down that track?
Yeah, for sure. So I touched on it, like, kind of at the end of my background, but I committed to go run at University of New Orleans, and the head coach at the time, he followed a pretty similar system to what I was doing. So my first semester here, I was doing pretty much not exactly, there was changes, but it was pretty much similar to what I was doing back home. And I kind of stagnated again. I went from 14:47 to 14:43 in the 5K. I went from 8:30 to 8:27 in the 3K. Like, my improvement was very, very small. And I guess I came over and I was like, man, I'm just going to smash it. I'm going to, you know, break 14 and all that kind of stuff. You know, very excited. And I guess between semesters, so I was home over winter, which is their summer break, and the head coach left. So we didn't have a coach. And when that happened, I was like, all right, so I just had probably 6 months of kind of plateauing. Like, what am I going to do? And I was like, you know what? Like, you know, the English Britons are getting pretty good. You know, they're decent. Like, they're pretty good. And what was happening in college running as well at the time, which obviously most of your listeners being Australian, it probably didn't come back here as much. Everyone was doing it. The double thresholds, double workouts were getting huge in the States. And my coach tried to dabble in it, but it just wasn't really, no one was responding very well to it. So when he left, I was like, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, you know, there's plenty of resources online. Marius Bakken, who invented the Norwegian method, he has posted all of his training on Let's Run since like 2001 or something. So you have to dig for it, but you can definitely find it. He has the article, obviously, that's really popular about it. And I didn't one-to-one replicate it, but kind of working with the new coach that came in, I was like, all right, this is kind of what I want to do. So I increased my mileage up to about like 140, 150, and I started doing these double thresholds. But what people get caught up in the double, like this isn't a hard session. Neither of the sessions very hard. The morning session is basically like you're running probably about, you know, 8 to 10K worth of volume at like marathon pace off shorter recovery. But you're doing 1600 meter reps, 2K reps, like you're not running super fast. In the afternoon, you're probably running more of like half marathon pace, but same thing, like you're doing 8 by 1K, you know, maybe 20 by 400 at, you know, threshold and, or at like half marathon pace, which isn't, it's very manageable. So that's where people get caught up in it. But yeah, so I was doing that. And then my Friday session was still a bit more specific. So during cross country, that'd be a cross country specific workout where, you know, we were racing 8K cross country. So, you know, that would be whatever that might be, more VO2 kind of work. And I was still, mileage is high. And I long runs as well is something that, especially for my kind of events, like the 1500 to the 5K at the moment, like I don't really need to go any longer than like an hour 45. So those are probably, that's kind of like what I started doing. And it's obviously slightly different to what they're doing. It's not a one-to-one replica. But yeah, it's kind of evolved since then though. So that's what I first started doing. And I guess through after cross country, that's when I started really like dialing it in. I got my lactate meter. So I was actually able to do, you know, by the lactate sample, which I guess compared to heart rate, there's less variability in it. It's obviously, it's not a necessity, but it's obviously, that's what English Britain's doing. And that's what a lot of programs doing over here. And so I invested in that, and I guess that allows me to really dial in these sessions. So I can literally put the treadmill on a pace, take a sample. It gives me a reading. I'm like, all right, perfect. That's where I need to be. I need to stay here. Oh, I need to increase it a little bit. I need to decrease it a little bit. So it takes the ego out of it as well, because you can't really dispute what your blood's saying. Same thing with heart rate, I guess. But so that's kind of like a little bit of a insight into kind of what double threshold is and kind of how I've been implementing it. It's really worked for me. I've been a really high responder to it. I would say I probably get like 20% of my weekly volume at threshold. So, you know, if I'm doing 160K in a week, like, you know, I'm getting a solid like 30 to 40K worth of threshold running in a week. And that match with sessions, like these more anaerobic sessions, VO2 sessions, but like I've taken all the ego out of my training. It's like, you know, if I'm not feeling good, nah, don't worry about it. Let's just do threshold. If, you know, I'm having a really good session, but I might have kind of let the ego get the better of me, all right, that's fine. Let's stop the session there. Like that was a good rep. That we're going to end it there. And it's something that I'm definitely maturing a lot more now, and just taking all of the kind of, as I've kind of said a few times, the ego out of it.
Yeah.
Definitely just looking things more like methodically. I've had some pretty big breakthroughs. So.
Yeah, you've been an amazing responder to it. And I think that's the thing with running training is like, there's so many ways to do it, and everyone's a little bit different. And like you said, like you've always struggled with that speed element. So maybe like you're more of that aerobic kind of distance runner that is a really high responder to threshold work and like seemingly like it, this is a case in point. And no, it's amazing to see what have you sort of progressed it to in terms of this double threshold method since the cross country seasons. So like, have you added a second session in? And then I'm just interested, once it gets into sort of track season, which it is now, like how have you periodized it and tried to still stay sharp for like the 3:47 yeah. 1500 you just did?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess like, it's important to note as well that this threshold work, like obviously I'm doing quite a lot of it. There's still ways to get in speed development without having to flog yourself in a 10 by 400 off 60 seconds, something like that. Like Mondays and Thursdays, so literally after this call, I'm going to go do short hills, you know, 10, 15 second hills, like hard. And then Thursdays, I actually, you know, spike up. I do a normal warm up, spike up, and I'm doing like, you know, fast 100s, fast 200s, fast 150s. I might even do some flying 30s. So like, pretty much like maximal velocity stuff. Like, so I'm still getting the speed development stuff in, but obviously that threshold session is going to be, especially because the intensity is so low, you can kind of get away with doing this really high intensity, kind of mask behind that more lower intensity threshold work. But I guess, right at the moment, so I'm doing a lot of that speed development work. And then that Friday session, probably about once a month, I do like a pretty hard anaerobic session. So a few weeks ago, I ran a session where I did some threshold work at the beginning just to warm up. I do threshold for a lot of things. Like I do it in my warm up. I do it for races. I do it for workouts. Like I'm always kind of, it's all I'm thinking about threshold. So yeah, started with some threshold, and then I did a 400 at 57 point, like low. I did 3 minutes rest. I ran a 1K in 2:31, 5 minutes rest, 457 high, and then I did more threshold work on the back end. So like that was like a really hard anaerobic workout, which I'll do probably once a month. But so that's kind of how like in track that changes. In cross, that Friday session might be, you know, K reps at cross country pace, or you know, maybe we even did a session where we did like a mile hard to simulate getting out. And then we did like a progression run after. So that's kind of like it. That's pretty much the main difference, is that that Friday session just becomes a bit more specific for whatever season I'm in. That's kind of what we've been playing with.
Yeah.
But we race a lot over here as well, right? So like for an example, doing indoor, I race every week pretty much since I got here, apart from two.
Oh wow.
So. It, like we race a lot over here, and then outdoor. So what I'm in right now, like I raced last week, I'm racing this week, I'm racing next week. Then I've got a week break, then I race again. So that Tuesday session, you have to be careful anyway. You can't push it hard anyway. So that's why the threshold works really well, because I can still get in, you know, 16, 18K with the threshold running, but you know, it's not going to negatively affect me for the race. And with this speed development work I'm doing kind of in between, it kind of works out well that I'm still working on that, being able to run at pace, but I guess I'm putting a lot of eggs in the aerobic basket.
Yep.
It's probably the best way to put it. And then that anaerobic side of stuff, I just have to trust that I've kind of been teaching my body how to run, you know, 60 second pace and be able to hold it, kind of thing.
Yes. And yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, like, because you're racing so much too, so you're getting pretty much, like, you know, so much anaerobic stimulus there. And
race yourself in the shape kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, but how are you standing on the start line? Like, so this 10-second PB over 1500 on the weekend, like, were you standing on the start line trying to run that? Or, like, where was your, because obviously, like, like you've probably seen yourself more like as a 5K, 3K guy prior to that, or you know, longer distance guy, and then suddenly you've run a 3:47. Suddenly, like that's pretty rare to run a 10-second PB over 1500 when you've already been in the sport for 5 or 6 years. To take that amount of time off in one hit is pretty rare. Like, so were you actually trying to run it that time? Did you believe that you could run it just because you're feeling so fit? Or, yeah, I'm interested to hear more about that 1500, because I feel like that, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that is just a clear sign that he's just really responded to this whole method.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting that, like, I've been talking quite a lot about, like, how meticulous I am with training. But when it comes to racing, I'm the complete opposite. I don't think about anything. I'm on the start line just like, you know, I don't know what's about to happen. I had a pacer. So one of my former teammates was pacing me for 202. And I was like, all right, so I just got to follow his singlet. And then from there, it's, you know, if I close, I can probably run to the 350. So I guess I did kind of think I was going to run around 350 or 352 just based on workouts, all that kind of thing. But yeah, to be honest, like, I didn't even have a race plan. I wasn't thinking at all about the race. So it was more just because I can get in my head really easily about it, especially racing wise. So I always work better by just going with the flow a bit more. And I think I've raced enough over that 5 to 6 years that, and I'm a student of the sport. I love watching running. I'm always watching running races, whatever. I know how to run a race. I kind of just trust that whatever I see, I'm just going to react. Like, it's not going to be one of those things. It's almost instinctive now. So even in that 1500, there was a guy who, after the pace had dropped, he tried to, like, you know, he increased the pace, and it's like, all right, well, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm just going to stay here. And then even the move I made to win the race, so I won that race as well, was like, you know, I did it, like, I flung myself off the bed, like, that kind of stuff. I'm not planning to do that. It's more just like in the moment. But I pretty much raced all my races this season like that. And it's been a really big mentality switch from previously, where I've had race plans. And sometimes if the race plan doesn't go according to plan, it, like, you know, most people don't have plan B and C at the disposal. So obviously it's not going to work. That approach isn't going to work for everyone. Some people need like a strict regimen. It's all right, we're going to hit this and this and this. But for me, you know, I ran 14:18 like that, 26 second PB in the 5K. I won conference in the 3K, beating a 13:56 Kenyan who was 28. Like, I did the exact same. I didn't have a race plan. And I think as well, by doing that, you don't limit yourself. You're not going to say, like, all right, I'm going to go out in this, and then, like, that's kind of where I want to be. It's like, no, well, I'm going to, you know, that's where the biggest breakthrough is going to come in, when you're not actually limiting yourself, I think.
No, that's really awesome to hear. And I think, I reckon myself, I've overthought races, and you can really limit yourself because you're too in your head. Do you think that's come about, like, that mentality, just from so many races and so much exposure to the racing circuit in the college system over there, and where you've kind of just you've got a bit more race savvy, and you've learnt that it's better to sort of be a bit more in the moment rather than just overthink it, and because sometimes, like, you can really make yourself, if you're thinking about it too much, you can actually make it feel harder than it is.
I've kind of gone to the approach now that, like, I want to be zen. Like, I don't even want to be, like, as relaxed as possible, because, like, my whole kind of philosophy of myself anyway, and I guess I've seen it as well a lot with teammates. I have some really intelligent teammates, you know, got into med school, you know, going to dental school, that kind of stuff, but they're just head cases. Like, hey, in races, I can see them thinking, like, the move's going, and I'm seeing them think, I'm like, man, just go. And, you know, like, I know they can do it, kind of thing as well. So I guess seeing that, and then watching races, like, I have the YouTube channel, like, editing these races, I'm like, man, I can see myself, like, I knew in that moment, like, I was thinking, like, oh, do I go? Do I stay? Do I go? So, yeah, no, just definitely just being as relaxed as possible. And I'm a big believer that as soon as you tense up, that's you're done. Like, once you tense up, it's hard to come back. So if you stay as relaxed as possible for as long as possible, that's where you're going to have your best results. Because, I mean, even, like, you're obviously way more qualified than me in that kind of a half, but, like, you know, the way we move biomechanically, as soon as you, you know, you tense up your shoulders, like, and that stuff can be caused mentally. I'm a big believer in it.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, like, even just the way that you've sort of described that, like, I was sort of thinking of Kipchoge and how he just, he looks so relaxed, and like, he's in his, he's in the zone, like, when he runs. Spot on. And I think it's so good that you've realized that, because like, if you follow your YouTube channel, you are so meticulous with like, you're doing all the 1%ers, you're documenting the whole journey, you really are sort of trying to maximize, you know, every, like, you're squeezing every drop out of the lemon like, you're really trying to make it. And I think I've seen it, I'm probably guilty of it, like, you can do that in training, but sometimes, like, you try too hard and you're on race day, you're your own worst enemy. You've shot yourself in the foot because you've just overthought it. You've so yeah, it's about knowing when to relax and when you have to, like, you know, think
make
about
your
things.
Move kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's really good. With you just mentioned your former college. So you're unattached now, and you've got a few races coming up, so tell us about that.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I guess, like, the whole system over here, the easiest way to kind of explain it is, it's like kind of like professional sport. You know, I kind of requested that I want to transfer. I want to go to another school, kind of much how like a footy player would be like, look, I want to leave and, you know, transfer to another club. So that's kind of how like the system works. So I'm in the transfer portal, and my school I'm at currently has the policy that I can't run for them when I'm on the transfer portal. Pretty silly, in my opinion, but you know, it is what it is. And it's actually worked out really well for me. So I have full, like, I can plan my season, I can coach myself. It's worked out really well. So at the moment, I'm racing this weekend at LSU, which is a very big school, very good track school, but their distance program and the meet itself probably won't be great, but it'll still be a really good opportunity just to get another race under the belt. I'm either going to do the 1500 or the 3K, or I might do both. I just see how I'm feeling. But after that, that'll be the two big races of my season. I applied for Riley Relays and Brian Clay. So Riley Relays, the entry standard's 14:14 and 3:47 to get in. So, like, it's a pretty elite meet. So that's the slower end. So I'd be right on, like, kind of the cutoff for that one. And then Brian Clay, same thing. Like, it's a very elite meet. So they're going to be two really good opportunities that, I mean, man, like, the way things have been feeling, like, I don't want to, like, put times out there and stuff, but I'm definitely going to give 14 a shake. Like, I'm going to give it a crack, I think, trying to get under, just the way I'd never kind of, I was saying this to mum on the phone, actually, right before I got on this, I was like, mum, like, if you told me I would have run 3:47 at the end of my career, I would have been, like, stoked.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's one of those things where I'm like, all right, like, I'm not going to limit myself anymore. Like, it's, obviously I'm responding really well to everything and I'm in a good spot mentally. It's super exciting time as well, because I'm getting to talk to all these coaches that I would have never even got an email reply from half these coaches like a year ago, maybe even 3 months ago. Oh, they wouldn't even reply to my email, but, you know, we're now there trying to, like, reach out to me and stuff. So it's super exciting and it's almost a little bit imposter syndrome at the moment, but no, I'm definitely just, yeah, absolutely loving it at the moment. Every run, you kind of, you get excited for it, because I've had it the whole season. It's like, when I ran 14:18, I was like, man, you know, pump the chest out, 14:18, man, now. even after conference, like, oh, man, just one conference, like, man, how good. And
you deserve it, though. Like, you've put a lot of work in, and you've really thought about it, and you've gone through periods of overtraining and it not working and not clicking. The amazing thing is you're still so young, like, you're still really young. Yeah, you just got to take your time. Like, you know, you've said it well in your YouTube, like, you know, often it's just layers, like, year after year. But it's good that you've sort of found discovering like different approaches that are working for you, like, that's running, like, it's all experiential, and you start to find, like, different methods that work well for you, and you're starting to collect collect them. Do you know, like, so of the coaches that you've talked to, like, when will the transfer be sort of sealed and you'll go on to somewhere else? When does that all sort of, how does that all work out? Because a lot of Australians don't really know much about the US college system.
So, yeah, I've been on the portal since the 6th of March. So I guess, like, it's like a window, and I'm in, like, this is a small window. I should pretty much, I've kind of got, like, a few schools that I've kind of cut down now, which those are kind of the schools I want to go to. So I guess from that, I'll probably be committed hopefully within the next week or two. So yeah, no, that's kind of what's going on.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. And then in terms of the US system, what have some of the highlights been? So for runners back here that are interested in going over to the US system, what are some things they could sort of look forward to, or like, what have been your experiences for them to sort of look out for and take note of, or and even just the application process?
So big thing for me is I did all this myself. So don't do that because you'll end up in a situation where I have, where I potentially kind of cooked myself a little bit, where I was so excited to come over that I probably didn't do enough research. I didn't do all that kind of stuff. I'm really well versed in it all now. And I was when I was getting recruited, but I end up in a situation here where it wasn't great, to be honest. And I loved being here and stuff, but there was definitely stuff that happened that shouldn't have happened at an institution, like a D1 institution. It's probably the nicest way to put things. So that's kind of like, it's been a chain reaction. That's kind of why I'm looking now to see what I can kind of get to. But
yeah,
my biggest advice would be, it's a really big investment, a huge investment, but an agent, like, it would make your life so much easier, so much less stressful. I did well cross trials the week before I was supposed to go, but my visa hadn't come through yet. So I'm just waiting for my visa. I didn't even know if I was going to be able to go until August, but I wanted to come in January. So it was like a whole thing, but an agent like walked you through all that. An agent's got connections where, you know, I was just shooting emails in the dark to coaches, and even like talking to coaches, like it's pretty intimidating, and having an agent to kind of walk you through that and kind of, you know, set things up for you is huge. And it's something I've been using an agent now. I'll give him a shout out, Nathan Gillis. So if you're looking for an agent, definitely hit him up. But he's really good. He's been there, done that kind of thing as well. And all these agents have. And that experience is just second to none kind of thing. It they can even, once you're over there as well, if you have problems, they can help you out with it. Where I've been in the dark a lot of the time, where it's like I've had issues, but then it's like I'm by myself with it. Like there's no one telling me like, all right, dude, you should probably do this or do this, like suggestions kind of thing. So yeah, saying that though, like you can do it yourself, and just make sure you research a lot more than I did. Make sure you be realistic as well. That's another huge one. If I've got to be honest, like nowadays for a guy trying to go over to college on a full ride, you need to be under 8:30, 14:45. If you're a 1500 guy, like a 3:56, like that's kind of where we're getting to now, where it's like, it's getting a lot harder to get money to get scholarships. So if you're a full flat guy, don't email Oregon, be like, hey, like, do you guys want me? Like, it's stuff like that where I was very naive, I guess, and all of that. So yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. So be realistic, use an agent, and just academics. That's one thing as well. I have a lot of friends who can't go to college because they didn't take the subjects in school. It starts from year 9. So a lot of people listening to this probably won't be in year 9. They're probably like in year 11 or 12. And it's like, oh, didn't take math methods in year 9, can't go over. It's not exactly like that, but you have to be really careful to make sure you've taken the required subjects. There is still routes to get in, but yeah, definitely. So those would be the three.
Yep.
Yeah. Be realistic, academics, use an agent.
Yeah.
That'd probably be my advice.
No, that's great advice, Matt. I've coach a girl who's going over in August, and she used an agent, and I was really impressed with the process. She chatted to four different colleges, and the college she's chosen in Florida, she had four interviews, and she even chatted to the girls on the cross country team without the coach there. But then I just filled about three buckets that she had, like her course that she wanted to get into. It's in a beautiful spot in the world, and the running program looked good. And so she's going over there with a little bit more confidence. Other thing, I'm wary of holding you up too long, but for the double threshold method and for Australians that are interested in dabbling in it, how would you suggest, obviously it depends on the runner's experience and how long they've been in the sport and where they're at with their own running, but how would you suggest easing into it, or what would your recommendations be if someone's interested in thinking that they might respond well to it? What would you suggest?
Yeah, no, for sure. So it's one of those things where tread very carefully. Like, I've never had a running injury. I've obviously had bouts over training, but I'm very robust, I would say. And there's a lot of people who aren't like that. So if you've had like an extensive kind of injury history, I just don't think it's worth it. I think you can still get a lot of benefits from doing kind of a mixed threshold workout where you hit both aerobic and anaerobic threshold in the same session. So you can definitely still train kind of like the double threshold method without actually having to do a double threshold, if that kind of makes sense. You can stack a lot more volume in these sessions than a lot of people think. Like, you can easily do 10 by 1K off 60 if you make sure you sit in the right zones kind of thing. But I guess there'd be a few things that I would say are like non-negotiables before you start doing double thresholds. One, you have to get a lactate test done. So lab, track, whatever. You have to get one test. You have to get a test done. Make sure you've got a heart rate monitor. Going by feel just isn't enough. You're going to leave too much to chance by doing things by feel. Lactate test with a heart rate monitor. You don't have to get a lactate meter. Obviously, it's cool, but it's not necessary. You can't be running less than, I'd say, 100, 110K a week. If you're not doing that, like, you need to have at least some kind of volume in your legs kind of thing. And busy sessions, like, I mean, I did one last week where I got like 31K in the day. And if you're doing less than 100K a week, that's, you know, a lot of your weekly mileage done. So those are probably like the two non-negotiables you have to be running you have to be running at least 100, 110K a week and, having that lactate test done. So once you've gotten that done, it's making sure you stick to your zones. And whether you have a treadmill is an awesome way to do it. I've often done both sessions on the treadmill, but what I like doing is the morning session is your easy kind of marathon pace workout. So if you're starting into it, it could literally just be as simple as 3x2K at like marathon pace, or obviously the heart rate zone you have of 60 seconds, really easy. You should finish it going, I could do that again pretty comfortably. And then the afternoon, that's when you can either go to the track or the road, and you're doing a little bit of a higher intensity. So, you know, anaerobic threshold, more like traditional, what, you know, a lot of Australians would do with like a 30 minute threshold. That's the kind of pace we're looking to hit, but we're only hitting it for, you know, 6 to 8 by 1K, for an example. You might do 15 to 20 by 400. I like doing 400s in track season because you can run a little bit faster at the same kind of, so I feel like that pushes it's a bit more track specific, and it also kind of allows to push that anaerobic threshold a bit further because you're only running threshold for a minute or, you know, 90 seconds, whatever. So that'd be kind of like my things with it. It's just, try not to leave as much things to chance. Just make sure, you take the next day super easy. Like, that should be Wednesday. If you're running 6 days a week, take it off kind of thing. Or, you know, that's a day where I'm running like 150, 160K a week. Like, I might only do like 15K on Wednesday. Just really making sure, like, we're getting recovered.
Yep. I'm interested, like, so once you started doing it, like, obviously, it's you're running really well performance-wise. How have you been feeling during the week compared to how you would normally feel after sort of a more a traditional sort of a, Aussie kind of session where, like, say it was like, 6 1K reps where you're going a fair bit harder, or even 8 400 reps where you're going a fair bit harder off 1 minute static recovery. Like, how are you finding you feel differently the next day or even that day? Is there any differences there?
Yeah, no, for sure. You can definitely tell you've got a lot more volume in your legs. You definitely feel like your legs are like a, almost, I wouldn't say like, if you've raced like a half maybe, but actually, no, not even that. It's not even that bad. To be honest, like, I've kind of gone to a point now where I recover really well off the double thresholds, but I've been doing it for, you know, oh man, I've been doing it for like at least 6 months now. And I would say I've only probably missed like 4 or 5 weeks where I haven't done a double threshold. So I would say, I mean, man, I'm thinking back when I used to do like the traditional system, I'd be really sore the next day. And even track workouts, I'd be cooked the next day. If I do a track workout now, I'm cooked for like 3 days. Like, I'm feeling like bad for 3 days. Like that session I talked about earlier, that 400, 1K, 400, like I was feeling that on Monday, kind of thing. So I would say that, yeah, you can recover a lot better from it. It's just one of those things that there's so much volume that that's where I kind of, even if I'm feeling good on Wednesday, which there's actually been a few Wednesdays where I've like woken up and like, man, I don't feel bad like at all. But it's one of those things that, yeah, you know, it's like you've got so much volume in your legs. So I feel like it's almost, you've got more volume. You can definitely tell you've run a lot more. But in terms of how you actually feel, it's still just like aerobic work. You're not going into the well. So I feel like you can recover a lot better off it.
Yep. Yeah, no, awesome to hear. Like, amazing insight. It's always good to hear from someone who's actually trying it out and it has really clicked for. So, yeah, it's great to hear from the horse's mouth experientially what you've gone through. And I know a lot of listeners will be keen to follow your progress, like, over there in the US. And you've got, like, a great YouTube channel and social media set up. Where can listeners find you, Matt?
Yeah, so at the moment, I'm probably most active on Instagram and Strava. So Matt Hanso on Instagram and then Matthew Hanson on Strava. I post everything on Strava and I go into detail about, you know, even like my lactate, like my readings. And so I've posted everything probably since like 2019 on Strava. Yeah. So I think it's been awesome to be able to myself go look back on it. And then obviously I have the YouTube channel as well, which I will post a bit more regularly. It's just, yeah, being the university student, they take a bit longer to edit. So, yeah, Matt Hanso on YouTube. So yeah, definitely give us a follow.
Awesome, Matt. It's been great to talk to you and, I wish you all the best, like, in the, next little while with your races coming up and also with the transfer, but even just your experience over there, like, and just, keep doing what you're doing and keep enjoying life and the sport.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on.
No, no worries, Matt.